स्वप्न देता है, तुम मौन खेलता है, विसर्जना जाता है, होगा तू प्रयास जाए, तू स्वप्न देता है, तुम मौन खेलता है, विसर्जना जाता है, pasar por la pues valeri nagre paran tu gardita
नमस्कार आणि स्वागत आऊ रिची उलयता आज सुशेगाद दनपार रेडिओ प्रोग्रामा वयर मुझ्या संगत आज आसात एक सोबीत चोली शिनेल फर्नांडीस आणि त्याच्या संगता एक चोलो बरी सोबीत हँडसम चोलो जुलियन डिसूजा
हाय रिचर्ड
हॅलो शिनेल
हाय रिचर्ड
हाय जुलियन
So today we are here with our first timer, Julian D'Souza, who's just come back from 8 months of travel, and he's very worldly now. So he's here to talk about his travels and how he views the current news status, the current climate in politics and in social and all those kind of things. Julian, how are you feeling about being on air for the first time?
Oh, well, it's such a good feeling to be on air. It's been a while since I even got up in front of people, so it's a huge change to actually be on air for once and, like, just be speaking to the public, you know?
Have you got people listening in, Julian, today?
I hope so.
Hey, Julian, first off, let's just start this right off with your biggest news. You've just come back from 8 months of traveling, and you've been where? Europe and Canada, America, South America. What was that all like? What was the whole experience like?
It was just absolutely incredible. There's no real way to describe, like, some of the feelings I had along the way. Like, every moment I had, like, I was appreciating every single moment. It was really living my life to the fullest. I've, like, ticked off, like, everything that I wanted to do for a long time. And, yeah, it was really, like, probably the best part of my life so far.
Why did you even decide to go on this OE?
Well, I woke up about 2 years ago, two and a half years ago now. And I realized, like, I had only about 2 years left of uni, and I would finish in June of 2017. And if I was to get a grad job, I would be starting in about February of 2018. So I've got, like, 6 months to kill. Like, what better to do? And then I was thinking to myself, what have I always wanted to do? And let's travel around the world and tick off a lot of things on the list. So, yeah, I just decided to save up, with all my money saved up, just plan, like, a huge trip and go every place that I've always wanted to go. And, yeah, just went from there. And just no one would believe, like, that I could do 6 months travels, including my mum, who was, like, she worked for Air India as well as a hostess. So even she didn't believe that you could do 6 months of travel. And, just decided to go ahead and do it and see if it was possible. And, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
So there must have been a huge amount of planning, Julian, before you really took off.
Oh, there was quite a bit of planning in terms of the route. Like, I definitely had events planned in mind. So, like, I was going to this festival called Tomorrowland, and that was in Belgium. And that was a big deal for me because tickets are very limited for that. They sell out within 15 minutes or so. So, having that in mind, then I wanted to go to football games. So I went to about 9 different games in Europe. So I had to pre-plan my route according to what I wanted to go to most. So that's why I started off in Europe, go through that season. Then I wanted to be in the US for Thanksgiving. So I made it in time in November to New York. And then I was in South America just for the end, and that was summer raising season kind of thing. So that was perfect as well because it was great climate.
So what's this festival in Belgium? What is this all? Music festival?
Or? It's an electronic dance music festival. Mm-hmm. And it's probably one of the best planned in the world because they think of literally everything over there. And, so it's so popular because it sells out so fast. And then you got people from all around the world coming across just to see that one music festival. And, they think of literally everything. Like, I would go to the toilet and I would come out of the toilet and then they would spray me with deodorant. They'd go clean the toilet straight out afterwards. And, you know, they think of everything to make your experience that bit better. And that's what gives the experience, it makes it one of the best experiences you can ever have.
So which was the best band that you found in that presentation?
Well, they're actually not really bands, they're artists. So,
You better keep the times.
Oh, wow, I have to give you the time. Well, the artists. So which was the best artist according to you?
There was actually quite a few. There was, like, you know, Darud, Deadmau5, Martin Garrix, Steve Aoki. Yeah, all the best DJs in Europe are coming together and the world are coming together in one place. And literally there were so many acts that I wanted to see and I couldn't see just because there's 16 different stages. And, you just can't see all of them.
Well, Chanel, take over because all that went right up my head.
No, that's fine. I think when Julian was at Tomorrowland, that was probably the one time we were here in New Zealand, stuck in the cold and all, you know, in the middle of winter. And we were so jealous watching his videos and seeing all his pictures and stuff. Okay. That was like the biggest thing for us. Hey, but that's cool. Tomorrowland, you say, was definitely a highlight for you.
Of course.
Have you got any other highlights? Or even if it's not a highlight, have you got something that really stood out to you in those 8 months?
Well, I was really impressed by South America. I just couldn't get enough of South America, to be honest, because it's a nature capital.
Which part? The whole of South America?
Yeah, the whole of South, all the places I went to. So I went to about four different countries in South America. I went to Colombia, went to Ecuador, I went to the Galapagos Islands, I went to a bit of the Amazon, Ecuador, I did Peru, and I did Bolivia. And so just every part of South America just makes it really the nature capital of the world, because there's so many different landscapes over there. And just the culture over there, I really fell in love with the Latino culture. I'm starting to learn Spanish now because of that.
Yesterday at Spicy House, a Chinese restaurant, uh-huh. He spoke to all the waiters and waitresses in Spanish.
Oh, wow.
He's that into it now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, have you learned the Spanish dance, the salsa?
Starting a bit of salsa and over in South America, so you know, going up and asking girls to salsa has come quite easy for me now.
How has that worked out for you, Julian?
Latinos love it. They love dancing with tourists.
That's cool. And did you have in South America? I know that you had something really scary happen to you. Do you want to elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah. So I was in the beach in this place called Mancora. It's a surface beach, and it's got very high waves, and it's got current like I've never seen before. So it was a day I was hungover as well, and the previous day we had gone, and we were doing bodyboarding on the beach, and the current was taking us leftwards. So where we were standing, we would be about 50 meters down the ocean within about 5 minutes or so, because that's how strong the current was. And so the next day I decided to wait a bit longer and go in after my friends, but some of my friends went without bodyboard, so I just decided I'll go in without a bodyboard and follow them. But they went in a bit deeper than I was, so I decided to catch up with them. And by the time I caught up with them, they had escaped a hard current coming in, and I got sunk in with the current. So yeah, I got a bit stranded by this in a bit of a rip over there. And luckily, someone had told me back in the day, if you're in a rip, whatever you do, don't panic. Go with the rip. And you have to swim. I got told afterwards that you have to swim parallel to it, but I didn't know that at the time. So I just was going with the rip. And luckily, a lifeguard came along and I said something in Spanish. I just said, "Sí." And there we go. He was helping me swim to shore. And it took them with like three lifeguards, and they bought me a float, and it took me about 25 minutes just to get to shore.
Ooh.
That is pretty crazy. I mean, to be in another country and in such a weird, serious situation, what advice do you have for people who are scared to travel because of something like that?
Well, you have to be street smart, of course, but, the one thing is that you talk to people. Just before you do doing things, you always have to talk to people. But, I mean, that shouldn't stop you from doing things. That's all the more reason you should go and do it and experience it for yourself, so you can get that experience and then, share that advice with other people based on your own experiences.
That's brilliant. Mm. So, Julian went 8 countries. Mm-hmm. 44 countries in 8 months. Was that correct?
No. 30 countries in 8 months. 44 in my lifetime.
44 in his lifetime. And he, you'd think being traveling every day somewhere new would sort of get you'd get swept up in that. But my mum has just texted into the show to say that she would like to shout out to Julian and say hats off to Julian. While even though Julian was away, his heart was in New Zealand, as he never failed to forget anybody's birthday, anniversary, or special occasion. So I think that's something we can commend him for, because he even called in to wish my dad and my mum on their birthdays.
Oh, fantastic. Wonderful. So on that note, let's listen to Gonzago Cutino. Au saiba poltori vieta.
Thank you. treba półtori wojta, tam mulia lodna kweta, maka sajba wadu dakuj, maka sajba wadu korona. Mam sajba półtori wojta, tam mulia lodna kweta, maka sajba wadu dakuj, maka sajba wadu korona. La mulher mata o vento com vontade só que a gamo já oitaria mamã, a gamo já taria mamã, macavoron pavo chivore, oi chivore, macavoron pavo chivore.
Welcome back. You're listening to Susegadanpa on 106.4 Planet FM. We're here today with Julian D'Souza and Richard Miranda and me, Chanel Fernandez. Now, before we get into our next segment, I'd just like to remind our listeners, tomorrow, Father Sebi of Holy Cross Parish, Henderson, is celebrating 25 years of religious life. So please keep him in your thoughts and prayers. And if you can, come tomorrow to his special Mass at Holy Cross at 10:30 a.m. Now, before the break, we were with Julian talking about his travels and the last 8 months he spent all over the world, basically. And we're back in New Zealand, unfortunately, for Julian. The holiday has ended. He's in cold, rainy New Zealand, and it's been a hellish week, to put it, in one way. How did you have these kind of weird weather changes and stuff when you were abroad as well?
Not over the top, no, not like this. There was only one incident I can think of, and that was quite dangerous. I was in Berlin, in the middle of a forest, and a storm just randomly started out of the blue, and it had about 150 km/h wind speeds, nothing like I've ever seen before. So in the middle of this jungle, all the trees are falling down, and this is hella dangerous because, all the trees are falling towards me, and, people are telling me to come inside. Yeah, like, you can get killed like this, and you go out at your own risk. So, yeah, this was the only bad experience I can think of that really happened. But apart from that, I had beautiful weather overseas. That's the good mix of snow, good mix of summer. Just everything I wanted in terms of weather.
Over here, trees were falling as well. Julian, did you see anything happen over here?
Yeah, this reminded me a bit of that storm back in Berlin. But luckily, I haven't heard too much about people dying over here. Over there, at least 7 people died, which was quite sad.
That's pretty intense, 7 people in one storm.
Well, I think more than the storm and the rain and the trees falling, I think it's the power outage that has caught us on the wrong foot.
Yeah, I think, Julian, you were out with power for some time as well.
Oh, about 12 hours, yeah. But not as much as you guys.
So did you get power back, Chanel, yesterday? What time?
I don't know, to be honest. I left, I think, about 8 o'clock something when the power had just come back on. And then my dad called me after midnight saying that the power's gone off again. So when you come home, please be careful. So it's been up and down with us in our area, but, not too bad.
Hey, we had a very funny experience yesterday. We tried to play a bit of Good Samaritan and called over some people from the Mount Roskill area who did not have power for almost about 4 or 5 days. And they had a problem with the food in their refrigerators. So I said, they said, well, I'll get some fish, which I've already defrosted, or rather it's automatically defrosted, and get along. And so they came home. And guess what? After about a good 20-30 minutes of good chit-chatting, the power at my place switched off.
What happened to the fish?
Oh, then we did the usual thing. Opened the barbecue, got the fish fried with a torch on the top to see if it's getting fried properly. So we didn't have power till quite about 10:30, 11, and then the power came back again. Yeah. And we continued with our chit-chat.
But it's been crazy, this power outage.
Yes,
especially people who have, as you said, 4 or 5 days gone without it. Where do you go to shower? Where do you make, go to cook your food? There's so much we take for granted without, with power.
Somebody sent me a text saying that, we take some of these things just for granted, you see. And there's a huge amount of outcry in the newspapers against Vector, the power line company. So our message out to all you listeners is that if there are some of you here in Auckland who still don't have power and still do not have electricity for cooking as such, or gas for cooking as such, can you send us a text and so we can just relay it back to Vector? Wouldn't that be good?
That would be good. Last night, a friend of mine sent in a photograph. She took a photo while she was driving in the heavy rain of all these workers from Vector fixing up this power line that had fallen down. And she's, it got me thinking as well, like, I was happy in my pajamas at home in the middle of the day. And I was able to, chillax. And these guys were out there braving the storm, doing all those things. So it's like Ivy says, hats off to all those people.
So what did you do, Julian, for those 12 hours? Was it daytime, nighttime?
No, it was nighttime, but I was busy at the gym while that was happening. And so I just came home to the blackout. After that, I just phoned up my auntie, who lives about 5 minutes away from me, went over to her house, had a shower. I was fine, just went straight to bed after that, got ready for work in the middle of the night. Power comes back on, good to go.
Yeah, but one thing I learned about this power outage is if you have your hot water cylinder on electricity, the water remains warm for almost an hour, hour and a half.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the advantage. But if it's on gas, I'm given to understand, it doesn't remain that warm. So that's the difference.
My poor sister had a very cold shower on the first day of the storm, that Wednesday, I think it was.
Yeah, okay.
And went to university freezing because of it, because we are connected to the gas line. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's not that rough living here, though.
Yeah. It's not rough living. I started singing, Thande, thande, pani mein nahana chahiye.
But, Julian, I can't say the same for you, because when you were traveling, were you living a bit rough sometimes, or was it good?
Well, after a while, I'm one of those people that is quite independent, and I can live in, like, low-rated hostels and things like that. So I did have to go kind of rough at certain times. So there was a time that I was trying to get into the Ukraine, and I completely forgot that you need a visa to go to the Ukraine. And I had only decided last minute to go to the Ukraine. So I'm denied at the border, and I have to find my way home from the Polish border. And no one there speaks English. So, that kind of stuff, I had to rough it out. I had to find a bus all the way back to Poland, and I had no idea how to find a bus. No one speaks English. I have to Google exactly what to do, stuck on Polish border, what to do. And, finally Google gave me the answer, called a train back. And then even that night as well, I made it to Budapest to go to Bulgaria. And then I see my ticket just before I'm about to catch my bus. And it turns out to be that it's an open ticket, and I have to confirm it. So the bus has already departed, and it's not coming to pick me up. So I have to sleep in the bus station for about 5 hours, from 12 o'clock at night to 5 a.m. in the morning. So I've got quite a bit used to roughing it out. Even coming home, I had about 20-something hours in the airport, just sleeping over there, just with my luggage, because I wasn't allowed to exit the airport. And I had such a long in-between flights, you know. So, got kind of learned to rough it out.
Yeah, so compared to all of that, this is like nothing.
Yeah, this is nothing. I'm like, okay, it's just a power outage.
Yeah, fair enough. But, you know, we're so fattened that we complain about even this. Yeah. Over here.
So what goes through your mind at that particular point of time, you know? You don't have a ticket, you don't have a visa, your ticket is expired, you know, you have to rough it out, and, you know, 5 hours at a place, and... what are your thoughts like at that point? You know, why did I come? What the hell?
No, it was never even that. Like, to be honest, I think because I was so happy to be overseas, so happy to be away from studying and work and everything, like, I just thought to myself, I knew before I was going, I said, anything that goes wrong, just remember, you're traveling around the world, you're doing something that, like, you know, other people would love to do. So every time something like this happened to me, I kind of just, like, laughed it off and just took it in my stride. So it was 2 a.m. when I was kicked off at the Polish border, and told to go back home. And from there, I just remember the first thing thinking is like, oh my God, this is going to be such a great story. I didn't even think, oh my God, what have I done? I'm like, oh my God, I forgot my visa, but this is great. Like, this is a great learning experience. This is great to tell people, like, you know, always check your visa requirements. And yeah, all this, that kind of stuff happened to me, always take it in your stride.
Yeah, but because, you know, when you have done your booking, you have done your ticketing, you've done everything, you can't blame anybody.
Yeah.
If it's a family, the mum blames the father blames the mother, the children blame the family.
This is all you.
So this is all you, isn't
all
it?
You.
Oh, that's a great experience, I must say.
I mean, it really pays off to have a positive attitude, because were you texting all of our group of friends while this was happening, or was it after?
It was afterwards I messaged you.
After, then. And we were panicking over here in Auckland, you know, what's Julian doing? How is he going to cope and how is he going to deal? But he was so blasé about the whole situation that it was just, It's a lesson for all of us, I think.
Yeah.
Positive thinking. That's your message.
And the first thing being kicked off that Ukrainian border, you stumble upon beautiful Ukrainian women just checking your passport. So I wasn't complaining at all. I was telling them, come to New Zealand. We need more of you.
Are there hot Ukrainian boys there? Because if I was stuck there, then, you know, that's...
I'm sure they are, Chanel. I don't check on the boys. You know?
All right. Well, should we...
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Perfect. Hey, you know, this whole experience of what you've been through and everything, what would you say was, you know, if so far everything you've talked about is positive and it's, you know, even the bad stuff is good, but have you had an experience where you were really like, you came back and you reflected on it and you're like, that was awful in your 8 months?
There was nothing that I could say was truly awful. I actually can't think of anything that was like really an awful experience. But I would definitely say like stuff that you want to see, you need to book it in advance and like just remember like to keep on top of that. So things like I wanted to go to the Sagrada Familia, and that's in Barcelona. So I should have booked that in advance, but I left that till 2 days before. That's something that, you know, I kind of missed out on. I couldn't go inside. So it's little things like that. Like, I was supposed to go to the Polish Tatra Mountains. Decided to book it only a day in advance. Wasn't allowed. It was all booked out. So just little things like that, you know, stuff that you're going to regret. Like, just remember to keep on top of it.
I think that's sound advice, Julian. Hey, okay, so... basically, when you were there and, you know, you come back here and you're all familiar with this, the way we do things in New Zealand, did you think that there was any sort of cultural differences between all the places you've been in here? Especially when you were stuck in doing all these things where you have to scramble last minute for accommodation and tickets and those kind of necessities.
Yeah, it's a huge difference as you go through the continents, actually. Like, we're in Europe, it's like you'll notice... the kind of stuff they have over there, it's like there's transportation everywhere, and everything is really like organized, whereas once I went to North America, I needed to Uber everywhere. So I realized they needed a car and I didn't have a car. They'd arrive on the right hand side of the road as well. So and that also became a problem in South America as well, because that I needed to Uber everywhere and you don't know the roads, it's all private roads. So luckily I was on a tour. So it's like little things like that, you know. It's easy to backpack in Europe, but then when it came to like North America, it became a bit more difficult. So it's got, the cultural differences in terms of that, it's like quite big.
Yeah. It's quite big. That's one way to say it. And what do you think was like the worst, not the worst, but the biggest difference between people in New Zealand and people abroad? I know you can't generalize abroad, so if you have like South America, North America, Europe.
Well, so like in North America, I noticed their attitudes are quite, if you go to some of the liberal states, they're heavily liberal in comparison to New Zealand, and you know, they have their conservative states, but I only really went to Houston, so I can't speak for the conservative states. But it's like they're quite a sensitized culture, I noticed over there. Like a lot of things you could say could be seen as offensive over there. Say, I was like describing myself, like, you know, as casual Kiwis, I would say something like, oh, I'm a bit of a retard back home. And that's a huge offense over there. Whereas, you know, casual Kiwis, a lot of us don't take a huge offense to that. Whereas in Europeans, the attitudes are also a bit liberal, but they're quite open-minded overall in general. And the South American attitudes, they're quite interesting, because when you get close to them, everyone is just seen as family, really. You have that language barrier, but they see you as family, even though you don't speak the same language. So there's like little differences here and there.
So on that note, let's take a song, Chanel.
Yeah.
Is that fine with you?
Yes.
Yes. Julian, too much of questioning?
No, not at all.
Not at all. Okay. So let's listen to the song.
Ha ha ha! ke chedun the nau ta che bela radis tarupan sundar baba sam kar jieta dolta na te madi koshe halta ni dolta askalam sukupit baba mog cholota yore tu yore boga barbur tum ko pai mucha ashmu non sadas apaita Mujhe tin kon busun kongre, mujhe kesre busun, mujhe karna bhakro lade tha. Yore tu yore moga barbar, tum gopal mujhe ashmu non sadans apaita. Re bogle mujhe tin kon busun kongre, mujhe kesre busun, mujhe karna bhakro lade tha. Chedwan maka gopan arailo bailen kondar thaporta amso anga mogut solta bian muzo jivre chivallo this grass mujhe raila dis tau melo ochu melo dis chedwan maka gudanti lipailo bailen kondar thaporta amso anga mogut solta bian muzo jivre chivallo re this grass mujhe raila dis tau melo ochu melo dis Shade one maka gudanti lipailo lokomlo baba mujhe salwalo kombya sagle bogle geun shin kari laglo no shita ka asle murre kitlo shobailo haure klo tancha mode shankare natlo lo belan u kotle dar maka chinna to bar bela to pai to ailo lo kitlan kankar lokomlo paita to lagi ailo sormun maka borot darailo dar maka chinna to bar bela to pai to ai lo lo kitlan kan kar lo kom lo pai ta to lagi ai lo sormun maka borat dadai lo
Welcome back to Sushega Danpa. You're listening to 104.6 FM with me, Chanel, Richard and Julian. Before we left off, we were talking to Julian, and Julian, you left off on a note about the Americas, North and South America. I've got 2 points to bring up with you following that conversation. First is a bit of a light one from our listener, Stallone D'Souza. He wants to know if you learned any smooth pickup lines on Spanish girls or Latino girls when you were in South America.
I wouldn't really call it smooth, but I did learn one line, and that was a line I consistently used to ask girls to dance, and there was, ¿Quieres bailar conmigo? Yes, that's bailar, Stallone.
could you translate? Is that just to ask them to dance? Or?
Yeah, will you dance with me?
And did it work?
Oh, always. Latinos love to dance with tourists.
Does it work in here?
Julian, can you repeat it? I didn't pick it up.
¿Quieres ¿Quieres bailar conmigo?
You want to repeat that?
¿Quieres bailar conmigo?
Sí.
When Richard goes home tonight, that's what he's going to be asking Harriet. Okay, well, the second topic, I know that this is a big area of interest for you. For a long time now, you've been interested in American politics and going to America. As you were talking about conservative states versus liberal states, you experienced it firsthand, how people are and, you know, the political situation in the U.S. Could you tell us about that?
Well, I think it's like every state is a different country pretty much in the U.S. And that's why when we look at it from you know, New Zealand and like other countries around the world, it's a bit hard to compare, to be honest, because America is divided into states, and that makes every state have a different form of thinking. So as you move state to state, you realize after talking to different kinds of people, they all have different opinions on different kinds of issues. So, you know, one of the big issues would be gun control right now. Once I got to Texas and I met people from Texas, even them, they who voted liberal would tell us, like, their brothers and sisters would only vote for the Republican Party simply because of gun control. Right now, I can see America's a very divided country right now. And it's going to be quite hard to solve this situation with Trump in power. I think it will take quite a long time, actually, for this all the issues to be resolved, to be honest.
So this love for guns in the United States, yeah. What's the basis for it? Where does it stem? Some sense of insecurity? Some sense of historical baggage or inheritance? What is it?
A lot of it is the Second Amendment, and that is the right to arms, the right to defend yourself, and that is seen as crucially important. Because it's not just defending yourself against people, but for them, it was the original reason was because their people wanted to defend themselves from tyranny, and the government wanted people to have this power in democracy and never to be overruled by an authoritarian and a tyranny government. So that's why this amendment is so important for them, because they would never want their government to become like a tyranny and be able to have complete control over the people.
It's really interesting, this whole idea of gun control, because coming up this week, I don't know if you know, will be the 20th anniversary of the Columbine shooting back in 1998. That was one of the biggest ones, you know. I think it was, what is it, Dylan and Eric or something like that, those two students who went around and, you know, killed so many of their own fellow students and teachers. And in the news last week, one of the survivors, who's in his late 30s now, he said that one of the shooters, one of the gunmen, had a gun held up to him, you know, in between his eyes, and said, "Give me one reason I shouldn't shoot you." And this guy sort of went and said, "Because I've never had any sort of animosity towards you. I've never really interacted with you in a negative way." And by luck or by God or whatever it is, he was spared and those guys moved on. But this survivor says, till today, he maintains that, you know, he believes that nothing bad would have happened if the teachers were allowed to defend themselves and were armed with guns, which is such a contrast to what we're seeing in the past few weeks when we're seeing, you know, people march for gun control. What do you make of that, Julian?
Well, it's very different to compare it to, like, say, a country like New Zealand. And, you know, Australia had a mass shooting once, and, you know, the government decided they're going to take away all their guns, and they had a buyback plan and bought all the guns back. Well, you can never see America ever doing this, because they have a completely different history, and a completely different formation. So for Americans, they're always going to have to strive for gun control rather than, you know, taking away people's guns. And with the NRA in power, the NRA has a huge amount of power over, like, the Republican politicians especially. So making, like, a lot of the policies and stuff will always incorporate the NRA, because they fund a lot of these politicians. So it's quite a big fight against the NRA right now. So it's going to take a while, but I think this new generation is going to have to take a lot more control and, you know, take the issues into their own hands like they are doing right now.
Well, Julian, the key issue in defending yourself is the right to, is your right as such, as what many Americans say. And that's where the foundation of the Second Amendment is, that your independence, your right is equally important as the right or the independence of another person as such. Just taking off from what Chanel said, the man who was spared and he went on to live now talks about the teachers being armed as such. To what extent do you feel that this exercising your right without a restraint, without being sensitive to other people around you or being conscious of other people around you, that's what New Zealand is all about. We are all sensitive about the people around us. To what extent do you think the policy pursued by the Americans is perfectly right? Or rather right, as they say.
Well, I don't think it's very appropriate because, as you saw in the news as well, they had one incident where a teacher was with a, had accidentally shot with a gun as well. So, you know, it's a lot of these teachers don't want to be armed as well, and the students are quite uncomfortable around because there needs to be training involved and everything. So, it's more of a question: is it appropriate? Of that teachers actually should be armed when if they don't want to be trained, you know, are we making this compulsory? And, you know, they had, like if you saw that one incident, there was a security outside the building and he didn't even want to come in the building to do anything about it. So it's like if you're arming teachers, should you expect them to have, you know, save the students and put their lives ahead of the students as well if they're in such a scary situation? So it's a very controversial issue of just arming teachers when there are other issues around it. If the teacher was to do something about it, would you blame the teacher not doing anything about it, or would you go back to blaming guns?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. This can go on and on.
This could go on and on. So yeah. We should probably nip it in the bud and move on to something similar, but slightly different, I guess. American media. Because you spent, how long were you in North America?
I was in North America about 5 weeks.
You spent 5 weeks, so that's over a month immersed in this culture that we only hear secondhand of. What was that like? Was it fake news everywhere?
No, I think I went to the liberal states and I met a lot of more liberal people. So I wouldn't say I had the complete exposure of like people prone to the fake news, and but I did meet a few people. I made it my business to go out and meet Trump supporters and find out what their thoughts were. And I noticed the common trend was that like people who did come support Trump, some of them were really smart people, educated, but a lot of them were either business people. Or they were people involved in like things like Fox. They were heavily influenced by Fox News, and that was a major issue over there, I think.
It's funny you mentioned Fox News, because just last week, Howard Kurtz, a Fox journalist, put up on his show Media Buzz this graphic of who people trust more, the media or Trump, and they sort of compared it with CNN, CNBC, and Fox. Turns out that on his own show, he kind of exposed that people trust Fox News like the least out of all the other media. Obviously, quickly that was retracted and the story turned around a little bit. But it is interesting to see how, you know, people view the media and perceive it and base their opinions on that. Do you find that you have certain, you know, media outlets that you listen to more than the others?
Yeah, definitely. My go-to is always Al Jazeera, because I know that they always get straight to the point, and it's one of the most unbiased media outlets I've ever come across. I always just go to that. I try and avoid social media outlets because that's having a really negative effect, I think, on some of the news. People are just going by the headlines they see and not actually reading articles. It's just clickbait going on. At the moment, they call it the fake news era. We really are in that era where people are starting to just go by what they see on social media and, not able to come up with decisions by themselves, otherwise they're just too influenced by the media, I guess.
So have you Are you bound to stop using social media because of those kind of things? Or?
Yeah, or not just because of those things, but I've definitely gone off social media quite a lot as well. And yeah, just trying to do my own things, do my own research, and yeah, just try to come up with my own views and see both points of views. And that's why like going to places like Al Jazeera and more neutral sites is helping me form better opinions.
And especially in the light of Mark Zuckerberg and the whole data sharing scandal. I mean, social media is quite a big topic at the moment, isn't it? Yeah.
But how do you discern between what's... I mean, there are everybody who's got an opinion on something or the other. And it's very difficult to sort of...
decide what's neutral.
What is neutral, what is not neutral. Like, for example, this whole outburst on Syria at the moment. And somebody saying that they're using chemical weapons and they've got enough amount of information on it. So where do you go back?
Well, I guess certain media outlets, they give... You can sense more of an opinion out of it than others. So, I mean, going to like somewhere like Fox News, you could always immediately see opinions coming across that, you know, could be pro-right wing and could be supportive of this text, and you'd see journalists justifying these reasons. Whereas in Al Jazeera, you won't find this very commonly. It will mostly be Syria has been attacked by, and Trump has done this. And, yeah, that will be straight to the point. It wouldn't be no, like, journalistic opinion. So that's what, you know, you want in media, just straight to the point.
So how would you compare the New Zealand media? Do you think it is still nascent and...
Still objective?
Still objective, or do you find them very balanced?
Well, at the moment, I can sense that even though they're so much better than some of the media outlets in America... Even with New Zealand media, you can sense the biasness going on as well. You know, I think people like the backlash against people like Mike Hosking, you know, he asks simple questions about things and you will always see backlash against him because he has that right-wing stance. But then you see like this a leftist media come across, you know, people rising up against people like Stuff.co.nz, New Zealand Herald, just because they have two left-wing views at times and don't represent both sides of the argument, you know. Mm-hmm. So I can definitely see there's like a rise in the balance of power. There's a shift that's going on towards the left at times, and then there's this balance of power shift that's leading to like the rise of the right, I guess.
Well, Chanel, you're in the media. You're now in the thick of it as such.
Yeah.
There are two events that took place. One is this racial issue of...
Taika Waititi.
Yeah. And the other is this current episode. TV3? Or who's this lady who had a... meeting a newscaster who had a meeting with the broadcasting minister as such in the Labour government. So it's all blown out all over the place. So what do you make about it?
You know, when you actually work behind the scenes in media, it makes a big difference to when you're just a viewer, just a layperson, because I genuinely see in the last year especially that I've been involved in the media and in a couple of different organisations as well, I definitely see journalists trying their hardest to be objective and as objective as they possibly can be, not trying to push agendas or push, you know, certain political views and stances, but they do try their hardest to weigh out the facts and, you know, find a balance between what's right and what's wrong. Unfortunately, what happens is a lot of news or current affairs-ish programs are heavily opinion-based.
Okay.
Because, you know, you've got the news at 6 and the news at 5:30 and those kind of things, but it's supposed to be just objective, which for the most part it is. But a lot of people are listening to talk shows, morning shows, late night shows, those kind
and
of
Mike
things.
Mike Hoskins and Larry and
those guys. Yeah, those kind of guys. And that's where I guess the perception is sort of skewed, because people sort of tend to find their arguments based on those opinions that those journalists in their talk show, which is heavily opinionated, say, rather than what the actual facts are. And I think that's...
So you on balance are saying that we in New Zealand are far more objective and balanced and not very biased?
Well,
or we are subtle about our bias.
I can't speak for other countries and their media because I've never been.
We have Julian here, who's 5 weeks.
But again, as a viewer, he's not been behind the scenes. I can't tell you exactly whether they are trying their hardest to be objective and then, you know, the audience perception is different. Mm. But at least in New Zealand, I'd say that they're doing well. But just that the people need to realize that, you know, some shows are opinion-based, some are, you know, purely
fair. Fair comment. You have a different view, Julian, on that?
No, I agree with that.
Yeah, okay. We've got another three or four minutes. Anything that you want to round up so that we don't get caught out on some topics we wanted to discuss and we couldn't?
No, that's basically one, as you mentioned, you know, we had an issue this week where a New Zealand great, Taika Waititi, who is a director who's gone and done so incredibly well and, you know, in America and Hollywood, and he's just done Thor, Ragnarok, that's probably his biggest film to date. Well, he's gone and he said that New Zealand is the best place on the planet to live in, but it's racist as beep. Now, you have gone and seen 30 other countries. How do you compare that to New Zealand, Julian? Is Taika right? Is he wrong?
Well, like, he's right in saying, I mean, there is racism in New Zealand, no doubt about it. But there is racism all around the world, and that's you know, something where every country has to work on its own. But we have different kinds of racial issues going on compared to the rest of the world. You know, in America, it's if you're walking down the street and you see a black man, often there'll be people who walk to the other side of the street. That's institutionalized racism is going on over there, and it's quite heavy. But we don't, you know, you won't see that very commonly over here. Here it's different issues, like saying, or something like, you know, bloody Maldives and stuff like that. That's like, you know, like quite issues, like little over going on over here. So, yeah, but in general, I would say New Zealand as a whole is quite more open-minded than some of the other countries overseas. Yeah, and we're far less racist than a lot of the countries overseas.
On that note, we should say thank you because we're just running out of time. And thanks, Julian. Wonderful experiences that you shared with us. And I think your friends must be thrilled to listen to you.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure I'm getting a lot of texts from everybody saying that they're glad to hear you on air. So thank you, Julian.
Thank you. I'd like to give a few shout-outs. So thank you to Chanel and the crew over here. I want to give a shout-out to the Warriors. 6 out of 6 today, hopefully. I want to give out a shout-out to Sam Brown, upcoming DJ. I want to give a shout-out to my mum and dad, who are in Europe at the moment. Hope you're listening to this. Liesl and Steve, hoping you're listening to this. And a big shout-out to Shauna, Savio, Shane, Aaron, Crit, Alden, Stallone, Aspen Fernandez, Ivy Fernandez, Ladera Fernandez, Craig Fernandez, other Craig Fernandez, and all who have supported me on this journey. Thank you so much.
Thank you.